Welcome to the Holy Spirit's Curriculum of Joy podcast. My name is Wanaka Oberhuber, and I'm your host. My guest today is Tina Irwin. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you for being here. So I will start this out with a question I like to ask my guests. How did you come to see the world the way you do today?
I see the world the way I do today because I've studied the world. I've studied metaphysics and spirituality and wondered and demanded answers to things that were beyond standard dogma, standard curriculum. And I didn't always agree with what I was told. And I felt that some things from an early age never made any sense to me. As an example, if energy is neither created nor destroyed, what happens to a soul at death? I mean, what happens to the energy that animates every person on Earth? And I spent an awful long time studying to find that answer, and I did find that answer, and I did find a way to help the dead and help the living and teach the living to help the dead, which is one of my... Actually, I own a trademark on that, teaching the living to help the dead. I also spent 20 years in the Navy. I retired at the commander level. And the Navy is only about service to others on so many different levels. And you see a lot of humanity in the military. It's only about people. In all kinds of circumstances, when people are at their best and when they're at their worst. And it's a microcosm of life in itself. So the more I looked at the Navy, the more I looked at humanity, the more I realized that following a spiritual path is the greatest way to understand the world. That's kind of a coconut shell of an explanation.
Yeah, let's unpack it a little more. So you must have, how did you research this? Because you had these questions in you. What got that satisfied these questions?
I was a child in the Catholic Church, and I'll tell you the things that never made sense to me. How can a child be so evil that you were constantly, every single week, confessing sins? It made me feel that. Is this particular religion focused on guilt? And I didn't want to spend my life guilty for something I hadn't done, or constantly feeling like I would never be good enough. And so I rejected that. Then I looked at other different faiths and wanted to understand what was their frame of reference. And their frame of reference was, you're born in sin and you die in sin. More guilt. But when I started truly studying the life of Christ and the teachings of Christ, it was all about joy. It was about loving one another, the power of family, of enjoying the moment, of enjoying nature, of appreciating the beauty that surrounds us. And I remember being in college and people telling me, well, if you're not part of my faith, then you have to go to a very dark place. You're just going to go to hell. And I said, but, you know, and they said, because you don't believe what we believe. And I said, but if you grew up on an island in the Pacific someplace and you never heard of this guy named Jesus and you died, does that mean that you're going to hell because you never heard of something that your pastor says is the right way? How can that be the way, the truth, and the light? There's no light there. There's just judgment. So if you're a really good person in another country, but you never heard of what someone believes is important, that doesn't make you a bad person. It just means that you have a different path. And the more I study, and I've been in 27 countries, I've been all over the world, including Austria, a gorgeous place. I realized that we are all the same. I was on a subway in Singapore, and there's a Muslim woman and a Hindi woman and a Christian woman, and they've got children with them. And they all have to go home and make supper. They all have to put clothes on their kids' backs and put them to bed and feed them and love them. And they all loved their children with a deep and abiding passion. That is the way. It is the life. It is light itself. So it's the experiences of observing humanity and seeing that we are all the same, no matter what faith you're born in, no matter what faith you experiment in following. At the end of the day, death is a unifier, and there is no religion in the afterlife. There's just the heaven world.
So how did you find out about that?
I discovered at an early age that I was really psychic and that I could see the ghosts of animals and then eventually people, and they didn't know what to do when they died. They had no idea that, you know, when death comes, you're supposed to go somewhere. But organized religion doesn't tell you what to do at death. And I talked to enough ghosts that said God couldn't possibly love me because I was born in sin and I died in sin. And I said, yes, but you went to church four times a week and twice on Sunday. You're a good person. Your family loves you. You've helped people all your life. Why wouldn't God just love you? Oh, no. My pastor said I was born in sin, so God can't love me. And so I brought in an angel and wrapped this woman in a blanket of healing light. And I respectfully requested that the angel guide this soul into the light. And I've done that thousands and thousands and thousands of times. And no one is discriminated against. When you ask the heaven world, or you ask an angel, or you use the crossing over prayer, which I wrote, which has been used all over the world, to take a soul into the heaven world without judgment, without prejudice, all of that goes away. What you are left with is the divine, the light, the joy of the heaven world. People are terrified of death. They don't know what's going to happen to them. Religions don't tell them except to make people so afraid. And I made it my mission to help remove the fear and encourage people to embrace it as a joyous event when the time comes in the natural course of living, to embrace the light when it comes.
Yeah, and there's the other side of it. So many people are terrified of life.
That's certainly true. And so I'm going to introduce another element to this. And I wrote a book called Soul Evolution, Past Lives and Karmic Ties. And that which makes up a soul includes our past lives, the karma we've created. But when you embrace a whole life, including all the difficulties, you face all of the karmic tests to the best of your ability. That helps your own soul evolution. We don't come here to live, take up space, and die and become compost. Souls are eternal. They live forever. It's what Christ meant when he talked about life everlasting. When a person is so despondent and so depressed that they cannot even conceive of staying, let's say that they take their own life. And I've worked with many people who took their own lives. They committed suicide. And I've done past life regressions with people who have taken their life in numerous past lives. The one case for this woman was so in love with this one particular soul. Sometimes he was her dad or her son or her husband or her brother. And each time he passed away, she took her own life, literally sometimes within hours of his death. But karma wants you to understand that you have to get past grief and attachment, that it's important to love and to let go. You can love forever, but sometimes a person's life on earth is over. And that opens up a doorway for you to live and be differently without that person. When you embrace the challenge, it changes your karmic path. When you flee the challenge, you're going to have to repeat the same challenge. And then with this particular woman, it was an astonishing study. Because we were working together, it enabled her to see what her path could be. She's a beautiful young woman, you know, really smart. And she met the love of her life, who was this soul from life after life. And when she met him, she just fell head over heels. And they were engaged to be married. But he was a Marine Corps pilot, and he was in a plane crash. When I saw it on television, because we all lived in the same area, I knew he died. This was her challenge. And so I called her. And she said, yes, it was him. And yes, he is the one. And I know that I have to live past this time. And we talked a little bit more, but she said, you know, I'm going to be okay this time. So a year later, I get an invitation to her wedding. And so I called her and I said, oh, I'm so honored to receive this invitation. But, you know, I don't know your friends. I don't know anyone. She said, yes, but you are the only person on earth who knows that I have stood up to my karmic challenge and I have lived past the death of this man I love so much. And I went to her wedding, and she married a wonderful man, and she loves him. She never stopped loving the one who isn't there. And she told me it's still hard for her, but she is showing enormous spiritual courage in facing that karmic challenge. So when we live a life on earth, it is to face the karmic challenges. I do remote viewing. And I was asked to remote view this young woman who was in a hospital. She was 22 years old. She was willing herself to death. She wanted to die. She wanted to die with every core and fiber of her being. And I asked if she would accept healing, and she said, no, do not keep me here. Well, I can't violate that soul's free will. I said, would you accept angels to assist you in crossing over? She said, yes, but don't prolong my life. So I respected her wishes. She died 2 days later, and she was immediately crossed over. And the point of crossing over is, if you never feel the love, the power of the love and the warmth of the divine, it's part of the 23rd Psalm. He restoreth my soul. If you don't ever have that opportunity to have that soul, that your very soul restored, to have the burdens of that you've lived understood, to rest, then you come back when you come back into another life, you are tired. You have not learned the things you needed to learn. In the heaven world, there are counselors of divine wisdom who sit down with you, and they help you understand the life just lived. If you took your own life, if you were murdered, if you died in childbirth, we don't all live 100 meaningful years. Sometimes we don't need that much time. We need a shorter time. None of that is for us to judge. Whatever the soul needs, a great deal of healing can be provided when that soul crosses over. And the living can assist them with that.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. So how do the living assist?
When someone you love dies, and you can't go through mortal life without experiencing grief, it's one of the most profound experiences any of us could ever have. When grief grips your heart and you feel like you cannot breathe, you cannot fathom there could be this much pain. It's a physical as well as emotional and spiritual pain on every level. Some people feel that their love is betrayed because God took their loved one. But people are going to die. And then you can accept that this was the person's life, even if they took their own life, was complete at that moment. And their time was done. Then you begin to release what's called attachment. And when you release that attachment and you choose to assist them to cross over, something as simple as asking an angel to take your loved one to the heaven world, I wrote a book called The Crossing Over Prayer Book. It has 88 prayers for every kind of death, mass casualties, suicide, murder, death of a child, abortion, miscarriage. Death comes in staggering variety of ways. You're a living person. What can you do? You can cross them over. You don't need to pay a medium to do this. We all have that power. We all have that humble power to help someone find the light of the divine. Even if they are the most horrible person on earth, if they're a murderer, you must cross them over. Their karma will determine what happens to them. It isn't up to us to judge. Any living person can do this. And I'll give you an example of a story from a woman who was in Upper State, New York. And she asked me if I would cross over her father. Her father was executed for murder. And he was haunting her. He didn't cross over. He's a murderer. And every day she could hear him. She was didn't realize it, but she was really psychic. She could hear him, and he was telling her to murder her four-year-old daughter day after day after day. And it was horrible. Well, her daughter was really psychic, and she could hear the bad man and all the things he was saying to her mother. So now we have a horrific situation. She said, "You have to cross him over for me." And I said, "Well, yeah, I can do that. But how much more powerful would it be if you did this? Here's the crossing over prayer. Say this prayer over and over at least three times and do it in a commanding voice. And keep saying it, and you're going to feel the subtle shift. It's the only way I can describe it. And then tell me what happens. If it doesn't work, of course, I'll be glad to cross him over for you. But it's 1,000% more powerful if you can do it for yourself." So about a week later, I get a phone call. And she says, "You're not going to believe this, but I crossed him over." And I said, "And did you feel the shift?" She said, "Oh, I felt the shift." And then my little girl said, "Mommy, thank you. The bad man is gone now." That is the power of crossing over an evil person. But let's say it's your child. Let's say it's a child who died of an infection. My niece died of group A strep. There were, one of the parents who, another parent lost a child, contacted my family and said, "Oh, our little girl died 2 months ago." And we visited them, and they said, "We think she crossed over, but that little girl was visiting me night after night, even while I'm grieving my niece." And I said, "But you know she didn't. She's here with you." And the parents said, "Yeah, we know she's here. We're keeping her here. We can't let her go." And I said, "But you have to let her go. It's your last act as her parent." And I asked them to close their eyes, and I brought in some angels. And anyone can bring in an angel. They earn karma by helping the living. So you make a humble request. "I hereby request an angel to assist me, please, right now." And that angel will assist and cross that child or grandparent or husband or even a stranger who's haunting you. Cross them over. And when she was crossed over, it's like the light came on inside of all of them in a certain way, because they're not only grieving her death, they're feeling her grief at her death. And that's one of these subtleties when you're dealing with death. You can't tell if it's all your grief or if it's your grief and the grief of a person who has died, because the dead grieve their own deaths. So the living can do an enormous amount. And again, I'm so grateful to you for giving me this opportunity to share these concepts with people who might choose to use them in their own way, in a private way. So I'd like to thank you for that.
Yeah, this is really, really important. And And grieving is not only something that happens when people die, it's also when you lose a job or you a spouse decides to divorce you or all these other things, you also grieve, right? Or you lost a lot of money or I don't know what else, right? There's so many different ways that you can get into grieving. Do you do anything for that, or is it really geared towards those who actually pass over?
I wrote a book called The Lightworker's Guide to Healing Grief. It's the first of the 8 books that I've written. And this book discusses in depth all the different kinds of grief. When it's a death, it's ended. When it's a divorce, it goes on and on. And there's so many lessons in a divorce. And one of the lessons is you grieve who you were with that person. You grieve the life you had when you were married to that person. And one of the theories, I'm not saying this is true, it's a theory that I have studied, is that the reason there's so much divorce is that many people have to work through a lot of things with an awful lot of different people. I don't know if that's true or not, but it's interesting. If you are divorced, it is a staggering opportunity to learn the lessons of the relationship. So grief is an opportunity, it's a learning opportunity to understand how did I end up with this person? Why did I fall in love with this person? And what can I take from the experience? Because if your marriage isn't a mistake, I hear a lot of people say, oh, I'm never going to make that mistake again. Well, what if it's not a mistake? What if it's an opportunity? If you divorce because someone was abusive, then you stop the abuse because you earn karma by allowing that person to continue to abuse you. They earn negative karma for abusing you, and you earn the karma for allowing them to abuse you until you say, no, not going to happen anymore. We're done. You go through with the divorce. You stand up. I had a client whose husband, we did a lot of regressions, and he murdered her life after life after life. And in this life, they're still together. And she's just sure this time she can change him. And that's not for me to judge that. And I said, why do you want to change him? And she kept saying, but I know there's something good inside of him. And I said, but you have to stand up for yourself. He is your lesson. He's your opportunity. So I got her to move out and get her own place for about 4 months. And he was so stunned that she found her backbone, that something inside of her changed. So instead of divorcing him, she took a big break in their togetherness because she was teaching her children that it's okay for your husband to abuse you. He's a very abusive man. But she stood up to him. She said, no, I'm not going to put up with this anymore. And she did a lot of work to get to the other side of it. And she did move back with him, and he began to change, and he sought help too for his many, many life patterns. And when he changed, it created this ripple effect throughout the family. And she didn't have to grieve who she was. She was celebrating who she was becoming. She didn't have to grieve that she died either. Now, let's take a different scenario. Let's say that you have a job and you get laid off or you're fired or something happens. You have an identity in your job. And this used to be true for, I don't know about anybody else's military service, but in the U.S. military, an awful lot of men didn't live after fire. They didn't live beyond 5 years after being retired, especially well, it was true for officer and enlisted. So if your whole identity is tied up in wearing that uniform or being CEO of a corporation or being, you know, the supervisor of a food service organization, your identity is what you do. Are you a mom? Are you a dad? Are you a supervisor? Are you an attorney? Who are you? And when you don't do that anymore, you have to get to know yourself again. And by you know, the Navy went to enormous lengths to educate the crews and help them re-enter civilian life. They stopped wearing plastic Navy shoes and they stopped arriving to work at 6 in the morning, arrived at the normal time, non-military people arrived. And they learned not to grieve who they were or grieve, oh, I wish I was still in the Navy. You're not. If you leave, you give somebody else an opportunity to come after you. You'll get to stay forever. So what is the lesson? The lesson is you have an experience. You take everything you can from the experience. And when it comes to its natural end, you accept it with grace. Whether it's a job, a marriage, maybe it's a relationship with a sibling or a child. Sometimes the relationships don't work out. And this can also be true of an animal dying. We have a lot of deep and profound feelings toward animals. There are also events that happen that people grieve, whether it's a war or a terrorist act. All of those events can create in us a grief because what we knew before is no more. There's a hurricane or an earthquake. I mean, I can't imagine the grief that people in Turkey were feeling with that latest massive quake or the Banda Aceh quake or what happened in Fukushima in Japan. Those people will grieve their homes, their property, your fire, your house burns down in fire. Part of your identity is where you live. So we're all going to grieve. The power resides in what is the lesson of the experience.
Yeah, that's very powerful to think about because we all have these situations, right? Whether it's, like you said, either you're the one who's divorced, maybe your parents divorced at some point, right? And things like that. And you all, there's all these new changing situations and dynamics. And sometimes, and I think we were speaking about guilt as a very powerful issue in various ways of seeing the world. And I think that's also one of the things that comes up in these grief situations, right? That there's a lot of guilt in your mind about it. And I'm sure you have some ideas of how one overcomes that.
That's an excellent point. Guilt is the slayer of many a good heart. You have survivor's guilt. You saw that. You see that in the military all the time. You know, this is the only guy who survived and everybody else died. Has happened in every war throughout time. If your child died and people say you're not supposed to live beyond your child, your child's supposed to put you in the ground. You're not supposed to put your child in the ground. But that's a rule you think should happen. Doesn't mean it's going to happen. When you look at the reality of guilt, it's the what if and if only. If only I had done this. If only I had seen that. But you didn't. Maybe you weren't meant to see it. Maybe it was that individual's time. I had a friend who's I have a lot of friends who are real estate agents. And this lady had taken really good care of her mom. And her mom became ill and she died. And her guilt was just towering. And I said, how many days did you wake up and decide to ignore your mother and treat her badly? She said, I took good care of my mother every single day. And I said, so what days did you forget to feed her? Oh, not a single one. And I said, did you make sure she had everything she needed? Every day. I said, then why are you guilty? You've done nothing wrong. If you look at your actions, and there's nothing you could have done, would have done that's any different. If you did the very best you could, there is no guilt. And this is really tough for families with suicide. And I have talked to so many grieving people about the death of a loved one. And they said, you know, we just had no idea. And I said, and you weren't meant to. I was speaking at the Edgar Casey Center in Virginia Beach several years ago, and this one woman stood up and she said, I tried to take my life 5 times. I failed to take my life 5 times. And I asked her if she would talk to the group, because I love life. I never wanted to take my life. And so I can't say, oh, I know how you feel, because I don't know how she feels. I don't know what that feels like, and I don't ever want to know. But I wanted her to convey her view of what it feels like inside. And when she stood up to speak, I mean, you could have heard a pin drop in that room. And she said, I listened to my family try to help me, and I turned them off. It's like there's a switch in my head, and I turned it to off. There's nothing anyone could have said that would have stopped all of those attempts. I said, okay, you're here and you seem like you're different. You're not wanting to take your own life. And she said, you know, the last time I tried, it's as if something changed inside of me and I realized I'm supposed to be here. I'm not supposed to leave. I'm supposed to live a whole life. And the family that supported me has welcomed me and welcomed the change in me. And I can see that this darkness that just so clouded me is gone. And she said, telling me to go to church, telling me I needed to pray or meditate, or none of that worked. It had to live within me. And so I, kind of interviewing her, said, so if you had actually died in one of your attempts, can you see what would have happened to your family? They would have felt they should have done something to save you. Would have, should have, if only, what if? And she said, yes, and I would have hurt them terribly, because there's nothing they could have done. Does this mean that if someone is trying to take their life that you shouldn't stop them? No, it doesn't mean that. You're never going to know how your attempts to listen, to be there, shifts someone else's karmic path. It's not for us to judge that. But if you're doing the best you can every day, like you go to church or you don't go to church, you treat your family fairly, your ethics are something you're proud of, be the person you'd like to be proud of, and there's no need for guilt. And a lady in North Dakota contacted me because her 17-year-old son took his life. And she said, what can I do? And I gave her the compassion prayer for suicide, which crosses a suicide over. And she crossed her son over. And she said, was I a bad mother? And this, I said, it's not for me to judge. But I would offer that perhaps karma isn't going to waste the energy of this death, because you are changed by it. You didn't want to keep him close. You let him cross over. You release the attachment to him. And it may be that life after life, he didn't ever cross into the light. He just kept coming back from a dark place. And even though this life he died, the light you offered him by crossing him over and the restorative elements he's going to find in the heaven world are perhaps among the greatest gifts you could have given him. So go through your days without guilt. And then she asked me if I would write a prayer for her and for anyone else who has experienced such a thing, for assisting your loved one after they have crossed over. And that's also in the Crossing Over Prayer book. And she said, I feel now that even though I crossed him over, I can help him. I feel more powerful because I use this prayer and I tell him how much I love him every night, and I'm sending him the energy of my love. And this prayer has really empowered me. And I said, because the energy of prayer is the purest energy of love. But you didn't need my prayer for that. You could have done it on your own, She said, yeah, but it sounds so much better when you put it together for me. I said, okay. But when Christ was the oldest of, I had like 9 siblings, and his siblings came to him one day and they said, you know, we want a prayer that we can say. And Christ said, the greatest prayer comes from within you. It comes from within your heart. And they said, yeah, but it sounds so much better if you create it. And so he created the Lord's Prayer. But if he were standing here today, he would tell you that the deepest, most profound prayer that comes from your heart is a wonderful prayer as well.
So you were speaking of crossing over people who are considered to be evil or have done awful things. And there's also people who don't feel like they're good, right? And just because you say, okay, there's people who manage to follow all those standards, they shouldn't feel guilty. But there's people who may have standards in their mind, but cannot follow them, right? They don't manage to do it. What do you say then?
I would say that if you feel that you have guilt, that's one of the beauty in the book, The Course in Miracles, was the concept of atonement. What can you do that will make things better? And let's say that your wife dies in a car accident and you were drunk driving and she died and you lived. You're the dad and you're busy and you left your kid in the back seat of a hot car and your child died. That's a lot of guilt. I mean, that is a lot of guilt. And I can talk to him blue in the face and it's not going to remove that person's guilt. That's just the reality of it. What I would say to that individual is, even though this happened to you in this moment, what did you learn? Every single painful experience is filled with an opportunity for learning. Now, if you are a real stinker, I mean, you're a really, really bad person, and I had a client whose father murdered his mother in front of a room full of people, then I would encourage family members to cross this person over, because this individual has no conscience. And I'm going to digress slightly on your question, because when you cross over a person who's just pure evil, I mean, this man murdered his wife in front of all these people and he didn't have a modicum of conscience about it. Even afterwards, even after he went to prison, he just didn't care. She was his and she defied him by trying to leave him, so he's going to kill her. Well, that person, when that person dies, they're going to reincarnate and be just as evil. Because they never received the energy of the divine. So that's an extreme case. So if you have a person who compromised their ethics at work, and they're at the end of their life, and they're dying of whatever the cause, and they're reviewing their life, and they're feeling really guilty about their life, the love of God, the love of Christ, is so powerful that when you ask for forgiveness, when you ask for assistance, as cliche as this may sound, you might be astonished at what comes to you. Even as you're dying, if you are asking for that assistance and you're getting some help crossing over, especially, you will get assistance in the higher realms. Maybe in the next life, you will have an opportunity to atone for what you did in this life. And that's really the best I can offer in that way. Sometimes we don't know why these things happen. I will say that people know they're murderers. They've been murdered by that person life after life, even if in this life they seem to be a stranger. It's an unfortunate reality.
Yeah, there's a lot about A Course in Miracles when it comes to the question of guilt. And in A Course in Miracles, there's all these statements of how we are not guilty, and that letting go of the idea of guilt is what gets you to act positively. So I was interested when you were saying that atonement principle, the principle of atonement, is accepting your purity, your wholeness, the love, the divine, as you stated it, that is who we are. Accepting that is actually what cleanses it. So the question is, you know, you were saying they don't have a conscience. Yeah, in the classical sense of what a conscience is, they don't, right? But in the sense of A Course in Miracles, how do they, the question is a conscience, if a conscience is built on guilt, then it's not a conscience, in the sense of actually getting you to act differently. So the question is, is there another way of getting to act positively without having to have a guilt conscience, so to speak?
I think it boils down to an individual basis. Some people have near-death experiences and they're not the same when they come back. As if a door was open and it showed them the life they could be living. But those people are very rare. Some people have a life crisis, or they come close to death, or they have a moment of awareness that strikes them. And some people are so hardwired based on what happened to them that they can't see or hear anything else. To atone means you have to have an awareness that you did something that was not for the highest good of yourself or others, and atoning for even harming yourself. And you have a lot of people who cut themselves, or they are anorexic, or they do things to themselves. And there are some people who are, like I say, very, very hardwired, and communicating with them is just going to be difficult. And helping them, sometimes the best you can do is offer them your heartfelt prayers. For people who go to church and walk out of that church every single Sunday guilty, I would offer them that they may want to reconsider what they're hearing and why. Because guilt will always seek punishment. It's a spiritual law. I didn't make it up, but if you look at it, it's what happens. When you release guilt, which is the whole point in A Course in, you know, you were saying Course in Miracles, when you can release the guilt, because all you have is the current moment. What took place before is in the past. You cannot change what took place once that die is cast. But when you choose to atone and do something that lifts you up and perhaps others, then you change your entire karmic path, your spiritual path, to change who you are. But you have to have an emotional intelligence that can get you to that place. And awakening can happen at any point in time. It can happen in traffic. It can happen when you're reading to your child at night. It can happen if you almost lose someone you love and you realize that every moment you're living is precious. Every day that you take a breath is a day of grace. When you're busy and you're stressed, you forget those things. And perhaps podcasts like this are a gentle reminder to take a breath and look around you and feel how beautiful life really can be. And turn off the social media stuff and just look around and see who loves you.
Yes, it's a very powerful journey to be on together. Like I say, we're walking each other home, as A Course in Miracles says it. And I personally get caught up in all kinds of guilt stories as well, right? Like anyone else, I guess. And the thing is, we make a lot of mistakes in life, right? And A Course in Miracles says that's not a problem, right? It can be corrected easily. There is no such thing as sin. There's only mistakes, right? That can be corrected by accepting the atonement, by letting go of guilt, as you described it before. Now, the question is, how do we get there quicker, right? Because that's the mastery is always the question is how fast do you let go of guilt, right? Because you get into it, many, at least I do, get into it plenty of the time.
You have to want to let it go. If we look at guilt from the point of view that we're choosing to punish ourselves because of something we perceive that we've done. I was on an airplane. I used to own a crystal mine in Arkansas, and so I was flying to Arkansas for this to go work on the mine. And I was on a Southwest plane, and the seats kind of faced each other, and everybody was having a conversation. It was wonderful. And the guy behind me says, it was a spiritual conversation because that's kind of what I attract. And he says, God can never love me. I am going to hell. My minister told me I'm going to hell. There's no amount of atonement I can do. God will never love me. And you could have heard a pin drop on that plane. It was one of those astounding moments. And I said, I don't know what your faith is. Please don't tell me. I don't want to know the name of your pastor. That name is irrelevant. In this moment, God loves every single soul on earth, period. There's no caveats. The light of the divine is there for every single soul who has ever lived. And guilt can be resolved through atonement, through love. Love and guilt don't go together. If you love someone and you make them constantly guilty, oh, if you really love me, you would. That's a guilt trip. That's not love. That's control and power. When you start learning to love others, not in the sappy way, but in a practical way, what can you do that's of spiritual service? How can you help others? You don't have to be a paramedic, but if your genuine goal is the service of others in some way, shape, or form, then you will find what's right for you, and you won't need to listen to that minister. Maybe the purpose of the minister telling you that was for you to wake up and seek an answer. I don't know what you did. Don't tell me. But find a way to learn from what took place. In the Huna tradition, H-U-N-A, it is the Hawaiian tradition. The Hawaiians were one of the original 12 tribes. And some of the original old Hawaiian words are the same words that the Berber tribesmen use in the Basque region of Spain. And in Huna, there is only one sin, and that is hurting a self, whether it's yourself or another self. And when you understand through there, I mean, the discussions in Huna are so pure and so simple, and there's so much love attached to it. Love really is the answer. But sometimes love is really hard work. So when you hurt yourself by saying, I'm guilty, or I'm stupid, or I'm overweight, or I'm not that bright, or, you know, I'm not good at math, fill in the blank, I'm not. But if you flip that to the I am a good person. There's a wonderful book by Louise Hay, You Can Heal Your Life. And a lot of times people are told things when they are children that are so cruel, that are so heartless. And to a child, an adult, a parent is like a god. They don't know how to discern when you say you're fat, ugly, stupid, you know, you're a whore, you're a slut, you're this. Sticks and stones can break your bones, but words will kill you. We are beings of water. We are made of water. Water has memory. Water responds to emotions given to that. Masaru Emoto proved that. The crystals made from the word love in any language are perfect, beautiful crystals, or Christ, or God. They're universal. When you look at what was done to people as children, it's just, I hear a lot of things that would make the angels weep. And I have to go back to that place of the soul is on a journey. It's not for me to judge how horrible it was. For the soul I'm helping, it's yes, you had an event in your life that was so hard. And you had an emotion that's now made you feel guilty. Let's take it apart. Let's unpack it and find out, what did you learn from it? Did you learn betrayal? Did you learn what it means to be heartless, irresponsibility? And when you look at the patterns in the person's life, and you look at each event, emotion, and what you learned, then that person gets to see those patterns over and over. And they can see why they feel perennially guilty. And when you take that apart and say, do you still feel you need to be guilty now? And they said, maybe I don't. The problem is most people are so close to what happened to them that without a gentle guide, without someone who can help you take it apart, just sort of, you know, it's like you've got this knotted mass in your hair. You need someone to help you untangle it and perhaps show you your goodness. When you remember your goodness, you remember that we are all part of the light itself, and we can let that light shine.
Yeah, it's very, very powerful to, in the Course in Miracles, it says to allow the Holy Spirit to remove the blocks to the awareness of love's presence. So it's basically saying love is present at all times. So it's a very powerful thing to go about that, right? You were saying, you know, remind the person of the goodness that's there, right? Of the beauty that is already there. Without even changing a single thing, there's already a lot of beauty there, right? And that spreads.
Yes, and there's an extremely important point I would like to make. We have a conscious self that we're chattering today. We have a subconscious self, and the job of the subconscious is to make your eyes blink and your heart beat and your blood to pump and my hands to move. And we have a superconscious self, which is our connection to the divine. But when you are a child, your subconscious and that part of you that wants to connect to the divine can be terribly hurt by something that happens to you as a child. Example, my father's father died. My grandfather died when my father was six. And my father was frozen at the age of his earliest trauma, which was 6 years old. When that trauma is ingrained in you as a child, maybe you lost your parents, maybe you lost a sibling at an early age. What, you were in an accident, your dad left, there was a divorce. Pick it. There's a whole menu of traumas. But your subconscious is frozen at the age of your earliest trauma. That's why you see children in big adult bodies behaving very badly. And the psychological trauma that has associated itself with that child is never healed. The hurt and the pain doesn't go away. That's why sexual abuse in churches is hideous. Because they separate that child from God. That's why sexual abuse from a spiritual person is the most hideous of all. Because they are telling the child that this is a spiritual thing. And it's a hideous lie. So when you are, whether you're listening to this and you had a trauma at an early age, understanding that trauma is going to influence your choices and your feelings about yourself as an adult is unbelievably important. I can't stress how important that is, which is why some people feel that they can't seem to get out from under it. They were beaten as a child. And I've seen this over and over. You know, the parent beat them and beat them and beat them. I had a client who was beaten every day until she grew to be 6 feet tall, and he just couldn't beat her anymore. She watched her father beat her sister till her sister beat her sister into mental retardation. She had such severe brain trauma. And this was a good person, this woman, but she didn't know how to get past the traumas of her childhood. We have to be so careful when we judge these things, because those traumas are horrific. But this woman, who was really considering taking her own life, this woman let me help her. And over time, she began to gently, we pulled that knot apart. She saw what a good person she is. She never beat her children. She had an amazing husband who was good and kind to her, and she was a good wife to him. She saw all the good things about herself, which she was blind to. And it would be easy if we could say we just pray enough and love enough, we can just overcome it. And I would offer that that's a possibility. But from a compassion view, if you had a serious trauma as a child, you have got to get some help for that. Reading and studying and following a spiritual path is going to help you in that path. But sometimes you need someone who can take you to a place, not just sit and listen to your problems once a week, but who really takes apart what happened to you. And you can't do it in a few days. It can take months and months and months, and you'll be studying for a long time. But the value of the lesson is beyond calculation.
So I could go on asking many questions, but I will give the people here an opportunity. Does any of you have a question or a comment that you would like to share? Please raise your hand by pressing the microphone button. Okay. If something comes up, please just feel free to raise your hand and I'll respond. Okay. So this is a very important topic when you come to the various ways that people work with trauma, right? There's many different approaches to that. And yes, there's, for instance, a solution-focused grief therapy where there's one approach, another is psychotherapy, and so on, right? Psychoanalysis, and. There's so many. And so you have a spiritual approach to it, because you've shared that you can hear things, you have psychic abilities to see things and go into the trauma that people are experiencing and get an idea what's going on and help them through it. What has been most helpful to people when you brought it up or shared it with them?
Each person is different. What I would say is no one's ever really heard them before. And that sounds very strange, but it's a function of actively listening and hearing the patterns, listening to the patterns of their speech, listening to the patterns of the events that happen, breaking it down, and enabling them to see that they aren't a bad person, that there is goodness within them, and that, this sounds kind of funny, but they can ask an angel to be with them anytime they want, and it's okay. And universally, people say, oh, you know, I couldn't impose on an angel. Listen, girlfriend, of course you can. Because angels earn karma by helping human beings. And you might be surprised how powerful asking an angel for assistance can be. I have also, when they get to a dark place sometimes, because you can't just work with somebody and then not give them actual tools to help them through the moments when you're not on the phone with them. And one of the tools is to pray, send healing to the world, or send healing to people who are suffering as you are suffering. As you help others to heal, so are you also healed. And when you come out of yourself, not as atonement in that case, but as having the power to help another person, it makes you stop feeling powerless and enables you to feel powerful. Because the act of prayer sometimes can give a person, because it's not prayer for themselves, oh God, give me this, oh, you know, I want Christ to help me with that. You ask an angel to help you in a difficult moment. And then when you get past the moment, you show gratitude, hugely important gratitude. That is very helpful. But helping the person understand their goodness as a human being. Yes, even though these terrible things happen to you, you're still a very good person. You've done these good things. And if the person is not a good person and they've done very bad things, and I actually had someone who was a hitman, and I didn't realize it till I was involved, and the problem I had was the guy had so much darkness. It's as if, yes, a human being it's like an onion skin. You're peeling off all these layers of the psyche to try to get to a place where that person can find peace within themselves just to go through the next day. But when the person is filled with such staggering darkness, there is going to be a limit to what the work that I can't speak for anybody else. I'll just talk for myself that I'm going to be able to do. Getting the person to atone, offering them a path to helping others, oftentimes gives them a tool to help. Also helping people understand that even though things were said to them as a child, it's only a thought and a thought can be changed. I often recommend people read Louise Hayes, You Can Heal Your Life. That quote is from her. It's only a thought and a thought can be changed. And then getting them to understand what happened to your parents. Child abuse is generational. When I was in the Navy, I had a sailor who worked for me, and he just beat the bejesus out of his wife. And the Navy sent him to anger management school, and they sent him to psychological therapy, and they did all these things. And one day he came into my office, and he said, Commander, what's the big deal? So I beat my wife. Nobody's perfect. And I, to this day, I remember how stunned I was that someone would say that to me. And he wasn't being a smart aleck. He wasn't being disrespectful to me. And I said, Petty Officer, whatever his name was, did your daddy beat you? And he said, yes, ma'am, he beat me every day. I said, did your granddaddy beat your daddy? And he said, yes, ma'am. And then he looked at me and he said, doesn't everybody get beaten when they grow up? And I was so glad that I hadn't gotten angry at him, that I had listened on another level. That's what, if you've got psychic ability, that's how you should be using it, that flipping cards. I listened to him. It's all he knew. And I said, no, it isn't. It's called assault, and people go to jail. If somebody did that to your wife on the street, you'd call the police and have them sent to jail, wouldn't you? Well, what was done to you was wrong, and your daddy and your granddaddy, and it's generational. And for the next 1,000 years, people are going to beat their children and their spouses. And you have the power in this moment to stop that for 1,000 years in the future. Are you man enough to do that? And for the first time, I got through to him. And he said, I never looked at it that way. I just thought that's what everybody did. And I was just, I said, then are you man enough to stop beating your wife and change your future and your daughter's future, your wife's future and your own? And he said, I'm going to do that. I'm going to do that. I said, then that's the answer. And he left, and then he got transferred. And to be honest, I don't know what happened. I would love to give you this happy ending. But the truth is, I don't know if what I said made a difference. I can only hope so.
Yeah, another thing you said was how words can kill. Now, I believe if we're speaking about it being over generations, then there's probably also words or ways of guilt tripping each other that have been passed on over many generations. Have you had a case or something where you experienced that, and how you were you able to help?
Yes, because some things that are generational, sometimes wealth is generational and the abuse of wealth is generational. Sometimes philanthropy is generational and people learn to be good to other people. I have seen that abortion is generational. I mean, I've had people tell me their mother did and their sister did and their grandmother did and it went back. And I mean, I was kind of stunned at that. Murder can be generational. And so when someone tells me that they've had these things happen, where everybody was, you know, beaten, or there were all these horrible things were said, sexual abuse. My point to them is, yes, all of those things have happened over time. And look at the damage that it's done. Let's take an example and start looking at the echo effect of that action, because that's what karma is. It's an echo effect. You drop a pebble in a pool, or you drop a boulder in a lake, you're going to have a ripple effect. And by practically facing people with what's happened and then saying, is this something you want to continue? Because the woman whose husband had murdered her many lifetimes, I said, you letting him abuse you, you're teaching your daughters and your sons that they can abuse, and you're teaching your daughters that accepting abuse is going to be okay. And they're going to teach your grandchildren. Is that what you want? And sometimes you just have to be blunt. And so, yeah, I've done it. I've done things that way. Alcoholism is from over, a lot of times it's just overbearing cruelty. The person, alcoholism is slow suicide. Drug addiction is slow suicide. Chronic depression. Sometimes that person, all they knew was, That's their escape. But they've been escaping. For some people, started drinking at 12. So to break that, it takes time to get them to understand that that person doesn't have any influence over them anymore. That person isn't going to hurt them anymore. And that they don't need to escape anymore. And they have to live with that concept. That person has died. That person's 3,000 miles away. That person is on the phone and you don't have to answer it. You can choose. And by getting the individual to understand the power of free will, what are you choosing to do today? How are you choosing to look at something today? And I've had people tell me that it caused them to stop when they saw them going back to that pattern and back up and say, no. If this was the pattern your parents had and you hear yourself saying it, you have the power to stop and say, wait a minute, that sounds like my mom or my dad or what my grandmother used to say. I'm going to step back. I'm not going to do that. Some of the powerful things are things like being so overbearing and controlling. If you live in a place of fear, you have to control everything. You need to control that. Oh my gosh, But if you live in a place where you're peaceful enough, you know, you don't really have control. I mean, you can figure out what you're going to make for supper. Okay. But on the big scheme of things, when you let go, life is easier. And I'll give you an example. If you're trying to control, then you're keeping your fist tightly. You're tightly making a fist. This is true with grief. If you're going to keep that grief tight, after a while, you're in pain. That's where so much illness comes from, is emotional causes to your physical illness. And you're holding it, and you're holding it, and you're holding it. And so somebody like me comes along and they go, well, you know, what happens if I just gently, we're going to open up your hand. We're just going to let your hand feel the light of the sun. And I want you to just feel how relaxed your hand is. Are you holding on to attachment and grief? Are you going to relax and let go? Are you holding on to control because you think that's what you have to do? Or you're going to take a deep breath and let go? And you're still all right. You're still okay. Nothing bad is going to happen to you. You're all right. And facing that fear can be enormously healing. I'm kind of combining so many different. I mean, I listen individually with when a person is really, really struggling, because I have to hear it all. I cannot miss a single word. One single word can just shift everything and tells me what the issue is. So there's a lot of different ways to handle it.
So that's a very, yeah. So you're trying to show people that they have a choice, no matter what went on or whatever intergenerational issues have been continuing and continuing and continuing, they still have a choice. They're not their soul function is not to be a victim anymore, right, of the previous happenings. And it doesn't have to be that way, like in the case of the man who realized that after you had asked that that people had been beating up each other throughout generations, and that isn't the case for everyone. He thought everyone had that same thing. So many of us think, yeah, guilt tripping within the family is a normal thing, right? Everyone has that, right? And maybe it isn't, right? You got that man at least to ponder whether he changed his ways or not, and it stayed or not. At least he pondered it, right? And thought maybe there is a way to change your mind or not, right? It still was, we don't know if it lasted or not, like you said, right? We hardly ever know if something lasted that we've done, right? Even if we know it was a wonderful thing to do. We don't always get follow-up to find out, right? Many people, you know, many people are working with children or educators or what, right? You don't get to follow all those children into adulthood. You don't know what happened, right? You don't know what impact you had, right? But you do know what you did or what you said or the interactions you had. And that's why you said, you know, the most powerful moment is the present, I think, or something like that. You didn't say those words. Henry would like to comment or ask a question. So go ahead, Henry. Okay, did you change your mind or? You can unmute or, oh yeah, there you go.
Oh, I forgot to unmute. Tina, I had already been talking. I want to ask you, because I recognize a lot of what you're doing. I do, but I haven't got it refined. There's a lot of confusion between the signals from what I'm hearing from people, like I do the same, I listen. And like what you just said a little while ago, one word can just flip the whole thing around. And like I did a little session with a woman who's about to turn 100 years old. And she's really held her. She's really clear in her mind. But and I've had this happen to me before, is that somehow I know the person is going to be in their transition real soon. And something I saw was that her family was not allowing her to go into her transition. And so I was there just drinking coffee, and I just focused all my attention on her and said, and I called her Mama. She's not my mother. And I just started talking to her. And then it's clear, but my question is more, there's other times when I see stuff coming, and I can see I can help somebody with just a small word here or there. Nothing great, nothing big, but I feel that moment. I feel that pregnant moment where I can just, like you said about just be a catalyst for somebody to change, just in that moment that they you know. So my question is kind of, how did you purify that? I suppose it that you went through a process where you had to filter out what was and wasn't useful. Is that clear? Is my question clear?
I don't want to put it. I've learned to listen differently. And I mean, I've been at this a really long time, and just, you know, after thousands of clients, you learn how to hear them on multiple levels. And there are some people that you are never going to be able to help. And there are some people who only need you for a little while. They need you to reaffirm some things, but they don't understand that the mental conversations they have with themselves are detrimental. That they're constantly telling themselves that they're not worthy. You see this with people who want wealth, and it always eludes them, and they don't feel worthy for it. And so they'll be saying, "Well, you know, I don't really deserve that, or I don't really need to." Whoa, 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 whoa! Let's go back. Let's back up. Back up. Back up. Let's talk about that. Tell me what you just said again. Where did that come from? She said, "I didn't say that." I said, "Yeah, you did. Is that what you feel? Is that a worthiness issue or a not worthiness issue? What is it?" And then we start taking it apart and going through it. And it goes back and it goes back. And I see this with people who are physically and sexually abused. The sexual abuse is so prolific. I certainly can't speak to any other country, but in the United States, it's just jaw-dropping. It's a national disgrace. And what happens is that root chakra is so damaged that it causes the person to, it's almost like it's a crippling effect. And when that happens, they don't feel worthy. Or the only way they get attention is by behaving in a sexual way. So it causes the personality to be misshapen. Sounds like a judgment. What am I trying to say? It causes the personality to go in a direction where they have some issues that are not readily resolvable. That some of these things, there's no pill, powder, potion, or procedure is going to correct. They have to acknowledge, I had this problem. I was so horribly abused that I hate men. This hatred becomes horrific. Or I had a client who was so abused as a little boy. I was surprised he wasn't a serial killer, honestly. But he was a good person. He had a lot of affairs, but he was looking for love in all the wrong places. And it was the only way I could explain to his wife that, yes, they were getting divorced, but he had gone as far as he could this lifetime by overcoming something that was horrific. Sometimes I can help a spouse understand the person they're married to by helping them understand what happened to that spouse as a child. Because sometimes the spouse has no ability to do this work. And to do this sort of emotional, spiritual work, it's not going to be for everybody. Not everybody can take it. Not everybody has the intellectual ability to process it and make it for them. And it's not up to me to judge. I just do the best I can with who is presented. And if I'm not the right person or I cannot help them, I will tell them so.
Yeah, this is a very important thing, is that there's the right person for everyone, right? And that's one thing one says, right? There's people that can help you in every stage of your life and everything that goes on, right? And it's not always you, right? If you're, might be someone else. And to acknowledge that, I think that's very powerful, right? To recognize, yes, we're actually many, but all are part of this journey together. And yes, we can allow that to be the case.
Well, it has to be the case. I mean, I'm absolutely not the right person for everyone. And my energy is much more straightforward and blunt. And I mean, it can be very compassionate, but I really get to the point. I do an enormous amount in an hour. To help people understand what's happening. But sometimes that person can't hear me and I have to step back. Sometimes the person has a character disorder that's so severe, there is nothing I can do. You cannot change a character disorder. Whether they are personality disorder or they are narcissistic personality disorder and immature personality disorder, and there are quite a few. And some of them are so severe that, especially borderline personality disorder, they will drain a person dry to the point of distraction. My mother used to work for a psychiatrist, and a psychiatrist could only handle two borderline personalities in his practice. That was it. He said they were so difficult. And he was an amazing individual, a really, really bright guy. And I thought that was really, really interesting. So there are some people, and I know everyone says there's always someone who can help. There's always someone out there who can help you. I think there's that potential, but some, whether they're paranoid schizophrenics, deep personality disorder problems, there are some things you can't fix. That person has to die and come back. And crossing them over, I know that's my soapbox, but it's a huge spiritual service. Massive, big, really big. And accepting that there are some people whose personalities cannot be changed in this lifetime. Doesn't mean it can't be changed in another lifetime or they can't get help. But they are going to be really tough. Another situation is really, really hard is fibromyalgia and chronic fatigue syndrome. And that is rampant in this country, in the United States. I don't know what those stats are for Europe, but they're huge here. And if you can see inside bodies, it looks like there are thousands and thousands of these little tiny watch batteries. And it's like they go on and off and that person's in pain and it's random and it is a nightmare. 100% of them, or 99.9% of them, were sexually abused. That sexual abuse is a pathway for something else to cause that person pain and take their energy. And that's a very powerful statement, and I'm being pretty blunt about it. But if someone has fibromyalgia there is nothing I can do for them. And I step away and I tell them honestly, because that there's something so fragile about that soul that anything I might do might make it worse. And so I offer them my compassion, but I politely tell them I cannot help them. And so there, I would love to say that there is somebody that can help them, but so far I've had MDs, board certified MDs, tell me that they can't take them either. Now there's another situation where a person has a chemical imbalance. And this is really important to understand. I have had this situation twice where the children had murderous ideation. One boy, we were pretty sure he was going to kill somebody. And there was a young girl, she was 17 in Florida. And she fought wanting to murder her high school classmates every day. She begged not to go to school because she couldn't control it. And this situation, this syndrome is called pyroluria. P-Y-R-O-L-U-R-I-A. And I encourage anyone who's listening to look it up. Don't just believe me. Do your own due diligence. But when a person has pyroluria, they have a chemical imbalance in the brain. And this was discovered by a doctor in Indiana in the 60s. They're missing zinc, manganese, magnesium, vitamin C, and some other minerals. And this doctor said that virtually everybody in prison is missing those minerals. And the individuals that came to me, their parents brought their kids to talk to me. They'd already been to every physician, every psychiatrist, and every psychotherapist. And they said, "We don't know what to do. We're desperate." It's like, gee, well, no pressure there. And I said, "You know, is this a spiritual issue? Are they possessed by the devil?" And I'm listening and listening and listening. And I said, "You know, it's Occam's razor. Sometimes it's the simplest solution. What if this person has pyroluria?" And what that actually means is you not only are you missing zinc and manganese and these minerals, you're missing vitamin B6. It's a pyroxidine that's lacking in the body. And I said, "Let's try it." So we did some dowsing to find out what the dosages should be, because I'm not prescribing. I'm making a suggestion. These are supplements that are over the counter. See what you can do. And look it up, and you can get a hair test to see if you're missing those minerals. This is true for a lot of people who have alcoholism. It could be true for people who are sexually abused as well. It's like something happens in the brain. Well, in both cases, once those two individuals started the supplements, the murderous ideation ceased. And what happens when you have a huge, when you have pyroluria, the adrenal glands are completely blown. And that can happen through trauma. I'm not sure this is of interest, but I'm hoping it is, because it's an avenue that most medical doctors don't look at, and they should. And in each case, both those children had suffered a severe trauma, three separate traumas that happened one right after the other, a divorce and a death and an accident or something in both cases. And their adrenals were completely blown. So that means that if a student, you know, shoves that kid in class, a normal kid with normal adrenal glands intact, they'd get, you know, pissed a little bit. This kid would have, so that person would have this much adrenaline. But the person whose adrenals are blown has this much adrenaline and wants to go after the kid in the hall. So once we restored these minerals and the vitamin B6, which you have to be on for, I mean, you absolutely have to take these B vitamins. They keep the brain, you know, healthy, and the minerals keep the body balanced. It's not just spiritual. You've got to look at the physical as well. Once those things happened, the murderous ideation ceased, but I warned the individuals and their families, they must stay on these. I don't know how long it takes to repair this. I'm not qualified to say if it's repairable. I'm making a suggestion. You have to decide what's best for you. But there were two kids that didn't take somebody else's life. So what I'm trying to say is when I'm working with someone, it isn't just they have a spiritual or it's psychological. Sometimes it's physical. That's what makes this job interesting for me, but challenging all at the same time.
So we're getting to the time to wrap up. So is there any question I didn't ask that you would have liked to have asked that you'd like to respond to before we wrap up?
My takeaway for everyone is, if you are dealing with a death, cross the person over. The Crossing Over Prayer book, the Crossing Over Prayer is on ghosthelpers.com. Help the dead. It will help. It will reduce the grief of the living. It will do great spiritual service. And love one another. Love is the answer. That really was the best message of Christ. Love one another without guilt, without pain, without sorrow, but with absolute joy. And I want to thank you all so much for having me on your show today. I've really enjoyed it. And I hope in some way this has been of service to anyone who happens to listen. Thank you so much.
Thank you for coming. And thank you for sharing all these thoughts of yours. And I truly believe that these conversations are helpful for whoever chooses to listen. And if you don't like it, just switch. You know, there's so many of them. You can read the descriptions and see what you like, right? Or just listen in and say, oh, this is the one for me or whatever, right? I don't know which episode or which conversation on which podcast, even if it's not mine, right? The one that I'm hosting, which one will help you, right? I'm just thrilled that there's the opportunity, right? That you might be helped by it. So thank you so much, everyone, for joining us. Thank you for the questions, the comments, and hopefully the continued watching and listening to these podcast episodes. Please review it, please subscribe, and please let people know about it. And Tina Irwin already said where you can reach her, right? I bet that's her homepage. And we'll put it in the show notes afterwards as well. And thank you all. And blessings until next time.